This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Monday, March 10th. I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, with a FutureGen project on indefinite hiatus, new attempts to use the technology of the plant in other projects. AM 580's Tom Rogers will have a report coming up. And we'll have a look at your AM 580 weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana, but first a look at today's news. An Illinois GOP congressman says the best chance of getting the FutureGen plant built in the state involves getting a new president. Sean Crawford explains.
While FutureGen backers are stressing their point the plant should be built in the eastern Illinois town of Mattoon, Republican John Shimkus says it's unlikely as long as President Bush is in the White House. That puts Shimkus, a congressman from Collinsville, in a bind. He's a longtime supporter of Bush, but also has pressure to promote Illinois coal. FutureGen would burn the state's high-sulfur coal and store pollutants underground. Shimkus says for this year, efforts will focus on having Congress find the money to build the facility.
And while that is occurring, we hope to kind of run out the clock on this administration and, you know, bring on a new one, whether that's a Republican administration under Senator McCain or a Democrat administration, that we can make another pitch about the FutureGen project as scoped. So that's kind of the plan. The plan is to try to delay and get another crack at it.
President Bush proposed the FutureGen plant, but his Department of Energy pulled funding for the project earlier this year amid concerns over rising cost. The agency now wants to use several smaller sites across the country. I'm Sean Crawford.
A former legal advisor to Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich is expected back on the stand today in the trial of Tony Renzko. Robert Wildebohr has that story.
Susan Lichtenstein was chief counsel for Governor Blagojevich during his first year in office. Last week, she told jurors that Renzko attended high-level strategy sessions where the governor and his top aides discussed pressing issues and new initiatives. Prosecutors are trying to show that Renzko, who's raised $1.5 million for Blagojevich, had access to the governor and could get people appointed to boards that oversee state contracts. Prosecutors charge Renzko used those boards to enrich himself by holding back business from companies that wouldn't pay bribes. Defense attorneys point out there are procedures for appointing people to state boards, and Renzko couldn't have just skirted them, even if he had wanted to. I'm Robert Wildebohr.
The University of Illinois has joined more than 500 colleges and universities nationwide in a pledge to fight global warming. Terry Ruprecht is the director of energy conservation at the U of I. He says to fulfill its pledge, the university will develop a plan in the next 2 years to curb energy consumption. Ruprecht says saving energy reduces the university's carbon emissions, but he says the plans have to take into account a big jump in energy consumption coming to the Urbana campus in about 3 years.
The problem is that we have this new petascale, the IBM Blue Waters project. That project, it's going to increase the campus electrical consumption by about 30%.
Ruprecht says the Blue Waters project will produce a new generation of supercomputers at the Urbana campus. He says only after the computer comes online in 2011 will the university be able to make concrete steps towards reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Tomorrow's election to fill Indiana's 7th congressional district seat will be barely a pause in the campaign, with the primary election for the full two-year term coming up on May 6th. Indianapolis City County Council member Andre Carson is the Democratic nominee to succeed his late grandmother, Julia Carson. His Republican opponent is State Representative John Elrod. Carson holds a big fundraising advantage over Elrod, but expected low voter turnout and potential backlash over complaints of political nepotism could favor the Republican. Carson is campaigning on a platform similar to his liberal grandmother. Elrod promotes himself as a moderate focused on fiscal reforms. Libertarian Sean Shepard is also in the race. Democrat Bill Foster's congressional win over the weekend in Chicago's far western suburbs gives him about 10 months in office. He's filling in the remainder of former Congressman Dennis Hastert's term. But to keep that seat, he'll have to face Republican Jim Oberweis again in November's general election. Tony Arnold reports on what will be different the second time around.
Even before the results came in on Saturday and a winner had been declared, Oberweis was subdued.
And I'm very sorry we came up a little bit short, but we're going to have another run at it in about 7 months.
Bring it on.
Foster supporter Terry Burmes says the Democrats' victory is a sign Hastert's hold on the 14th district has deteriorated.
Dennis Hastert sandbagged us by this special election in the first place, and we just beat him at his own game.
But others are quick to downplay Foster's win in the traditionally Republican district. Christine Dudley is a Republican strategist. She says there are a lot of factors unique to Saturday's election that won't be the same come November. Factors like a low voter turnout and the fact that Oberweis had just wrapped up a nasty primary campaign.
The DNA of that district still is Republican, and the opportunity to take the seat back in November is a very high probability.
Meantime, other observers say the race won't garner the same amount of interest in the general election, in part because there will also be a number of other competitive congressional races in play around Chicago. But Foster says regardless of the November campaign, he's itching to get to Washington. He'll be sworn in soon after the election is certified, and the State Board of Elections has until early April to do that. I'm Tony Arnold.
Eastern Illinois University is going green one vehicle at a time. Officials at the school in Charleston say they're going to replace several gas-powered minivans used by maintenance staff and for tours with electric-powered vehicles. The director of facilities planning and management says the new vehicles will also reduce costs. Officials say the vehicles also fit into the 325-acre university's master plan for becoming more pedestrian-friendly because they're smaller. The six-seat vehicles look like large golf carts, but are equipped with seat belts, turn signals, and adjustable mirrors. They'll be phased in over the next few years. The vehicles travel up to 25 miles per hour. For the latest newscast online, go to wiol.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Boncher. With the proposed Futuregen power plant on hiatus, it's unclear which path so-called clean coal research will take next. Futuregen was to turn coal into hydrogen before burning it to generate electricity and to inject the resulting carbon dioxide deep into the ground, all at one single plant near Mattoon. But as AM 580's Tom Rogers reports, other projects using portions of that technology are already taking root.
Mattoon won the competitive bidding process for the Futuregen plant last year over three other sites, including the Permian Basin region of West Texas. There, oil is the big industry. A power plant company called Tenaska now wants to build a plant in that same area that incorporates a major facet of Futuregen, sequestering the carbon dioxide from the burning process deep underground. Bart Ford is Tenaska's vice president of business development.
Right now we really like the project and we're able to develop it on our own and very excited about it.
Note that Ford said, on our own. That's quite different from Futuregen's original concept. More than a dozen coal and utility companies were to put up $400 million, and federal funds would fund the balance of the $1.8 billion demonstration plant. And the companies of the Futuregen Alliance would share the results of its research. The Bush administration's goal is to make carbon dioxide capture, coal gasification, and other technologies more useful in the commercial realm. And for Tenaska's plant in Texas, commercial viability would come from miles of oil fields. Ford says oil companies could buy the CO2 and then force it underground when wells using conventional drilling methods peter out.
Carbon dioxide, just because of its physical characteristics, is especially good for squeezing the oil out of the ground. And I know the estimate for the value of the oil that can be produced through this technique is about $1 billion per year with the carbon dioxide that the plant will be able to produce.
Ford says the CO2 would stay underground instead of leaching out into the atmosphere. But the project is still in the planning stages. And Futuregen Alliance CEO Michael Mudd says that's where such projects get tied up. He says companies have to find financing and generate profit as well as power.
And I'm not inclined to try to advance the technology and take technology risks, because if I fail to deliver on those contracts, I will have to pay liquidated damages to the person that expects to receive those powers. And because I'm using my own money, I have no incentive to share that with other people.
Mudd believes opening technological advances to public use will get the latest pollution control techniques into coal-fired plants quicker. And so far, despite all the plans, there are very few actual plants that sequester carbon dioxide or use coal gasification, which greatly cuts down on pollutants that give coal a bad name. FutureGen was supposed to do both at once. Steve Blankenship, an editor with the trade magazine Power Engineering, says that idea was more intriguing a few years ago when the price tag for FutureGen was closer to $1 billion.
But at $1.8 billion and climbing, to put all those eggs into that one basket, I think some of the administrators in D.C. thought, you know, maybe this is not the best way to spend the public money.
Why? Blankenship says other cutting-edge plants could sell CO2 to the oil industry, but no one knows if there would be a market for the gas elsewhere. And he says one of FutureGen's marketable byproducts was supposed to be hydrogen.
Remember 5 or 6 years ago, we were all headed toward a hydrogen economy. That was what everybody seemed to think, or at least a lot of people think. You know, that would mean that we were going to be replacing our internal combustion engines in our cars with fuel cells, which would run on hydrogen and not on gasoline.
But Blankenship says the momentum has since swung to plug-in hybrid electric cars. There went the potential market for hydrogen. So where does that leave FutureGen? $156 million was earmarked for it in this federal budget year, according to Phil Bloomer, an assistant to Illinois Congressman Tim Johnson. Now that money may be sent to other projects in what the Energy Department calls a restructuring of the FutureGen initiative. That money could be used as incentives for private sector projects. But Bloomer says that would be wasting the millions of dollars already pumped into studying the Mattoon site.
This project is already 5 years down the road. It's the only one that is that far along. So to go through the due diligence process that these folks already have, it's just silly.
Some companies like Tenaska think it might be worth the trouble, not only with its plant idea for West Texas, but for one in central Illinois. Regulators are looking at a proposed plant near Taylorville that would use coal gasification. It would be owned by Tenaska. But Mudd says the FutureGen proposal would pave the way for cleaner coal plants sooner.
And the question is, can you put the cart before the horse? Is the marketplace truly ready to accept the risk and the unknowns associated with plants with carbon capture and sequestration absent FutureGen? I firmly believe that when you look at the marketplace, that it's not there.
The answer to that question may be clearer in the next few months, as bids come in for federal money under the newly restructured FutureGen plan. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
In the forecast for the region today, partly sunny in the morning, then clearing. The high around 42 degrees. Tonight mostly clear. The low around 22. Sunny, not as cold tomorrow. The high around 55. Partly cloudy Tuesday evening. The low around 32. Mostly sunny Wednesday, warming even more. The high around 58. Partly cloudy Wednesday evening. The low near 40. Mostly cloudy Thursday with a chance of showers. The high around 55. Thursday night through Friday night, mostly cloudy skies with lows around 35. The high around 50. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Monday, March 10th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, wiol.illinois.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.